It is time for Message in the Bottle here on Downtown, brought to you every week by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. With us in studio, battling his man cold, Eric Meehan.
It's what I do. It's what I do for the people. I'll tell you, I just
You're
had
a gamer.
I had to get out of the house because as sad as a man with a man cold is, the truly terrifying thing is a mother who, in full professional battle attire, went back to bed, and I didn't see her for the remainder of the day until about 3 p.m., and that would be my wife. Wow. My wife does not get sick, ever. But when she gets sick... Wow.
Are you being blamed for this?
No. Okay. I think it's, you know, it's February.
Right.
Like,
it's everywhere.
Everybody, you know, Miss Amy, the kid's piano teacher, had to call out yesterday. She's always the, you know, the guy.
Carrie's squirting you.
If you don't have what I got yet, you're fine. I mean, it's, you know, it's a man cold. It comes from the fact that it was, you know, negative 30 last week, and it's like almost 60 now.
He's been here a long time, but you know, the weak Jersey constitution.
That's right. That's right. My belly can handle a lot, but my sinuses are delicate. But whatever. I can still smell wine. I know because we're drinking wine right now, and I'll tell you all about it once we get there.
It smells fabulous, by the way.
Yes, it is. Before I start, really appreciated that little mash bit.
Wasn't that great?
It's funny, like I had never seen the original Caddyshack. I only knew Caddyshack 2 growing up. I had no idea there was a movie MASH because that show was like required viewing in my family. I think it was probably the first thing I remember watching as a family regularly. Yeah. Cool stuff. So that brought back a lot of good memories like that. Speaking of good memories things, we're back to learning about that beautiful stuff that is in the bottle for the first half of the year. And we're in February now, so this is when we start to talk about purity in the bottle and wine agriculture and you know, how did that stuff get there. And people like to talk a lot about purity, and that's nice, but you know, where you find it and where you don't really might surprise you. And so we're going to talk a little bit today about the life cycle of a vine and you know, the basics there. So right now it is winter, despite the fact that it feels like spring this lone day when I'm talking about winter. But much as a lot of us Mainers are in, vines are in what we call dormancy, right? Vines are perennials. They basically die off every year and rebloom when Mother Nature tells them to. And they also, grapevines, they pollinate themselves. So they're, you know, perfect plant as far as that goes. So they obviously propagate very, very easily. If anybody's ever seen wild vine bushes, if you just leave, you know, without human intervention, they basically just send shoots out everywhere. They don't really grow a lot of fruit, and the fruit that they do is kind of here and there, a lot of leaves, a lot, you know, they send all their energy into growing, and so they kind of look like a mangy bush. So it's a lot of people are very surprised when, you go over and people talk about reclaiming an old vineyard and you're thinking, oh, cool, like old, you know, rose and stuff. It's not. It just looks like a bunch of, you know, gorse and stuff like that. It's brambles and it's nastiness. And you basically got to trim everything right down to the roots, essentially, exactly. and then kind of go again. But humans, you know, that's we've learned over time to tame them, yeah, by pruning them. And, training them to achieve maximum yield and maximum juice. You seem amused.
I latched onto a phrase there. I just want to dispel any rumors that Mangy Bush was Carrie's stripper name.
Well, there we are, February in Maine, folks. I don't make these things up. So
it hadn't been, but it may be now.
I was going to say, he's going to start a whole new life when he moves south. Well, I'm telling you, straight from Maine. They'd believe it too.
I'm sorry.
It's all good. Back to the vines. What we're doing in winter dormancy that's really setting them up for future success is sending them to the best schools. No. They're pruning them is what you're doing. You're going out on those bitter cold days and basically guessing, doing your best to say, I think this stem and this stem are going to produce the best fruit. They're going to be the hardiest. They're going to be the ones that I want to, you know, focus on for this plant. And you trim everything else off. You just get rid of it. And then you start to gently, as we said, train them. And that means, you know, and there's different styles of training vines. There's one where it kind of goes into a V, which is called a guillot. That's something that you see a lot in the more Frenchified areas, including, you know, Sonoma and everything like that. There's very interesting ways of training, like bush. You train them into a little baskets. That's what they do on the island of Santorini, because the island of Santorini is so buffeted by high winds that if you train them like normal, like you think vines look in a vineyard, they'd be destroyed.
And when you say train them, all in the way they're pruned?
Yeah, you train them you shape them. And with, you know, either wires, you know, again, going back to the vines that we all sort of have known, you know, if you do agritourism, go down to any place, they're kind of, you know, you walk down rows with lines strung between posts, and those are basically, you know, you'll see that all the vines are going in one direction. Sometimes, again, it has to do with wind. They do the same thing in Rioja. The winds sweep down these valleys, and so in order to protect the vines and also take advantage of their drying qualities to eliminate, you know, mildew and stuff like that, they'll train them in a certain way. So this is the time that they really start to do that. And then as it warms up, and this is, of course, you know, this is actually a good day to think about this, these days of warming and then getting really cold and warming, as we definitely see here in Maine. And what comes soon is bud break. And this is when, you know, you start to see the very, very tiny little buds coming out. And if there's a freeze, man, that can really, really ruin your day and your harvest later on. So that's coming up pretty shortly in most of the warmer regions of the world where they're actually growing the Vitis vinifera that we all like to drink. And you start to see tendrils and tiny, tiny little grapes. And this is when you start to think about what we call canopy management. Are you trimming back a lot of the leaves to allow the grapes to get the sun? Or sometimes if you're in an area where there's intense sunlight, you will actually want leaves growing. You'll train so the leaves will be growing over and then the grapes will be under them and naturally shaded, just like we'd set up an umbrella or something like that. So that's going to start to happen again in a couple of months. And then it starts to flower. It's absolutely beautiful. And then the most beautiful time, I guess, for grapes is really that sort of mid to late summer when the grapes start to take on their hue. And we call that veraison, which is basically truthfulness, as it were, to borrow a coined phrase from my friend Stephen Colbert. We're not friends. I would be if you're listening, Stephen. Call me.
He is.
Yeah, I figure he's got to be. And so that's when they reveal themselves, their true colors and stuff like that. And then you're really starting to look at the ripeness. Now, what's happening, so late summer going into fall, the stalk of the vine and everything is starting to harden. And you're starting to get into that checking the grapes for ripeness, something we call Brix, which is the ratio of sugars to water, and trying to figure out, you know, when you really want to harvest. And then, obviously, when you've determined that, you do harvest, you crush, you ferment, you mature, you bottle, you age it perhaps in the bottle. The bottle will travel, and then we drink, and it starts all over again. But it's absolutely, you know, fascinating. It's important to remember in all of this that we're still talking about agriculture, right? So it's farming. You know, it really is. It's checking the almanac. It's making sure that you know what you're doing and when you're doing it and why you're doing it. Obviously, you know, if you're someone who's planting on the biodynamic calendar, and we'll certainly start to talk about that. Now is another time that you're starting to think, you know, you're thinking about what you're doing vis-a-vis that in terms of all the preparations you have to make to attend to your vineyards. We'll talk about all those strange preparations in a couple of weeks. Again, once it gets into a bottle, you get to enjoy it. So the wine we're enjoying today, and this is kind of harping on my, I'm trying to this year make this the year of the grape that grapes that no one's heard of. I'm really into this whole idea that we're basically drinking 20 grapes over and over and over and over again, and that's a real shame. So this bottle that we're drinking today is one of my favorites, and there's a great story associated with it. It's not an expensive wine, and if you only drink expensive wines, I'd love to meet you and have you as a customer. Yes. However, I will advise you that I think you're missing out, because all those grapes that we're not drinking, a lot of them don't cost a lot. It's not that they're rare and therefore very expensive. It's that they're rare because a lot of people decided to homogenize for varying reasons. But the grape we're drinking today is it's from the Southwest. This is an appellation called Marciac. And it is basically grown here and in its neighboring village of Gaillac, but not a lot of other places. And it is an interesting grape. So the village of Marciac has like three producers in it, and Philippe Tullier, who makes this Domaine du Creux, he's the biggest, and he has, I think, something like 150 hectares because land was very, very inexpensive. Why? Well, phylloxera attacked, like it does in so many areas of France and Europe, and so basically the whole population fled northwards to Paris and to other cities and to industrial jobs. And they brought with them the love of, you know, this. This is a very sort of light, it's almost like Cabernet Franc. It's light-bodied, it's perfumey, it's wonderful, it's got kind of tangy. It's a great bistro wine. So these folks brought the idea of this sort of wine up to Paris and places like that. But essentially, it all got overgrown. We were talking about what, an overgrown vineyard's going to look like just a couple minutes ago. And so these guys went back and basically reestablished viticulture in this area. It's way, way, way upstream from places like Bordeaux, really smack dab in the middle of southwestern France. You can't get there from here, as it were. Very familiar. But an absolutely wonderful wine made out of, again, this grape called Fer, F-E-R, Cervadou. And it's fantastic. I love it. It's one of first weird wines I ever tried, which is important. We'll try to make 2019 the year of the weird wine. I know we're running out of time, so I did want to mention that there's a lot of things obviously coming up at Bangor Wine and Cheese, like we always have. Friday the 15th of this very month, now it's February, we have the Galentine's Day event with the Be Me Boutique featuring Paisley Ray Couture, and we're going to be doing a wine tasting for that, including a very delightful Oregon Pinot Noir Rosé that I love. We're going to be doing our monthly tasting on the 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. as per usual. That's free and open to the public as well. I keep mentioning this. We have tickets. They're going fast for our March 20th History in a Bottle, an evening with Chateau Mussard. So we're going to be welcoming Elizabeth George, who is the representative from Broadbent Selections. That is the exclusive importer of Chateau Mussard. Chateau Mussard, of course, the very famed Lebanese wine estate that is has survived through war, strife, simple downturns in the economy, everything, to maintain its reputation as one of the world's absolutely most important estates. So do please come to that if you're available. Tickets are $30 and available at Bangor Wine and Cheese. And then the next day, if you can't make that, we will be having Elizabeth as our guest for our regular monthly tasting on the 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. And we'll be tasting some of the Mussard Jeune, so their entry-level wines for that. And it'll be a lot of fun. Tons of stuff to keep in mind. Next week, we will be doing our Valentine's Day special. So all of you who are interested in whether, the health benefits, is wine good for your heart and things like that, tune into that. And I guess I have 1 minute left to talk about Alan Alda, and I don't know. What are we going to talk about?
Smoky Chipotle olive oil from Tavola.
Smoky Chipotle olive oil.
That sounds amazing.
That is amazing. Here's what's amazing about Smoky Chipotle olive oil is that on days like this, when you're feeling kind of cruddy, you pop some Orville Redenbacher and you put that on it. Mm. And it really solves a lot of problems. And if that doesn't solve all the problems, I'll bet Bangor Wine and Cheese has some other things that can maybe numb the pain just a little bit.
I have no doubt. Stop in and see them. 86 Main Street, downtown Bangor. Hammond Street. I say Main Street was wrong. Too much wine. That's good wine. 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. It's the wine place. Okay, it's just stumble up the street.
It's the wine
you'll find
place
it
on the hill. Fantastic. We'll see y'all next week.
That's Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese. Message in the bottle.